Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 4 years since the protests began in the Standing Rock Indian Reservation over the Dakota Access Pipeline.
The controversial Dakota Access Pipeline is designed to carry North Dakota oil through the Dakotas and Iowa to an existing pipeline in Illinois.
You feel it. You feel the tension.
The protesters came from all over the country to fight the Dakota Access Pipeline.
We're here to pray. We're just here to pray.
This land is where the Dakota Access Pipeline is being built.
What are you doing? Your water is under attack.
Stand up, fight back.
Thanks to the PBS NewsHour and NBC News for that audio. Many of us tend to associate the pipeline with those protests at Standing Rock, but it's run by a company called Energy Transfer. It travels through several states and comes right here into Illinois. And Illinois is not the only state challenging a proposal that would double the amount of oil flowing through the pipeline. Or I should say, Illinois is the only state challenging that proposal. Lesha Bushek has been reporting on this for Illinois Public Media, where she's climate and environmental reporter. Lesha, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by John Albers, an attorney with Shea Law, who's representing environmental groups in the case challenging Energy Transfer's plans. John, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being with me on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
And listeners, you are always welcome to join our conversation. What do you think? Should the Dakota Access Pipeline increase its capacity into Illinois? Do you have concerns about that? What do you think of how the pipeline was built? You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Lesha, I want to begin with you. We tend to associate the Dakota Access Pipeline, as I said a moment ago, with the protests at Standing Rock 2016 in North Dakota. But the pipeline goes through several states. Can you talk about why this pipeline was constructed and the route it takes?
Sure. The Dakota Access Pipeline was built to transport crude oil from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, and it was built really to bolster U.S. energy independence. It currently transports more than 500,000 barrels of oil per day, and just to give you a sense of how much oil that is, there's about 42 gallons of oil in just one barrel. And as many people might remember, the protests in 2016 led by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe were a response to the building of this pipeline under several bodies of water in North Dakota, including the Missouri River and Lake Oahe. The tribe said that the pipeline would be threatening those bodies of water that provide drinking water. And you know, that part of North Dakota is just the start of the pipeline. The pipeline actually runs through more than 1,100 miles through several different states. So it starts in North Dakota, goes through South Dakota, Iowa. It actually crosses under the Mississippi River, and it ends in South Central Illinois at a big oil terminal hub in Patoka. And what many people don't often realize is that Illinois is actually a major hub for a lot of pipelines leading to this Patoka hub. And once the oil reaches Patoka, it doesn't actually end up in Illinois. It's not used in Illinois. The oil is actually transferred to refineries near the Gulf of Mexico through other pipelines. And from there, it's often exported internationally.
So, as you mentioned, the Standing Rock Sioux, I think, got the most attention for their opposition to the pipeline. That was national news a number of years ago. But what about in Patoka? Were there concerns about the pipeline there?
So from my understanding and from some of the interviews I've done, there wasn't really as big of a response here locally in Illinois, and particularly in that south central area around Patoka. There have been a few smaller protests in Chicago and some other parts of Illinois. There's also been a few individual interveners and environmental groups that have intervened in cases in Illinois, but not really a major protest movement like we saw in North Dakota. I even spoke to a few people who lived near Patoka, and some people actually said that they supported the pipeline. They thought it was beneficial for Patoka and for Illinois from an economic standpoint. But of course, there are actually more concerns among landowners who are directly in the route of the pipeline in Illinois. And I interviewed a researcher for my story, Mackenzie Johnson, who is an assistant professor of natural resources and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois. And she was looking at this exact question: how did people along the route of the pipeline in Illinois feel about it? Were they opposed to it? Did they support it? And were there any connections between the different communities along its route? Interestingly, she found that in surveying some 70 landowners along its route in Illinois, she found that up to 80% of the respondents said that they were concerned about a lot of things, including environmental risks like leaks and spills, things like the loss of agricultural productivity. They were also concerned about how the pipeline would impact future generations.
I want to bring John Albers into the conversation now. You're lead attorney in a case before the Illinois Commerce Commission representing environmental groups that want to stop a proposal to double the amount of oil pumping through the pipeline. Can you tell us more about what the company Energy Transfer is proposing to do?
Sure. As far as Illinois is concerned, they want to double, well, as far as the whole pipeline is concerned, really, they want to almost double the capacity. Currently, it can transport up to 570,000 barrels per day, and they want to increase that to 1.1 million barrels per day. Now, in Illinois, that involves building a new pump station in Hancock County, upgrading a pump station in Patoka, and building a new pump station near Joppa down by southern tip of Illinois.
I was going to ask, I mean, physically, what does this entail? Are they just going to be building another tube along the current one, or is the sort of the infrastructure there and just needs to be built up a little bit?
Well, no, they tell us the same pipe can handle twice the throughput of oil. It's the pumps that they're going to be building that would actually just move the oil faster through the pipe. Getting it up to a speed of about 15 feet per second, which from our experts is an extreme velocity. So that's one of the concerns we have with this project.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What are your concerns about the flow rate? What I'm trying to imagine what 15 feet per second would be like of crude oil, and this is like not oil like you get when you pour out the Pennzoil can, right? This is a sludgy material, unrefined, I'm imagining.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. The oil from North Dakota is a light sweet crude, so it's not as bad as some, but still not something you want to have dumped in your backyard. But as far as the velocity, yeah, that's just one of our concerns. I mean, our expert in our case tells us that usually you can expect a velocity of 3 to 8 miles per hour. And the 15 feet per second boils down to a little over 10 miles per hour. There's no rule against the maximum velocity, or establishing a maximum velocity. But the faster you go, the more you've got to keep an eye on it, because it leads to, the potential for a surge overpressure situation. And that's basically, if some, minor change in the flow rate happens, you could basically have a rupture situation occur. And the flow can be changed by a pump shutdown or a valve closure. And, according to our engineering review, that's not all that uncommon. Other concerns, if I can go on, the operator's record as far as, their safety record in other parts of the country is not good. We asked them, initially, who was your operator in this situation? And they identified a company called Dapple Etco Operations Management. And we thought, okay, that's fine. Then we find out later, though, after fighting some battles and for discovery of information, that the actual operator is going to be a company called Sunoco Pipeline LP. And if you look at their operations, they've got a poor track record of monitoring for and preventing problems. And, just to emphasize that it's not just us that thinks that. There's a federal court judge in the case brought by the Standing Rock Tribe. I believe it was his March decision of this year, found that the operator, Sunoco Pipeline, has one of the lower performing safety records of any operator in the industry for spills and releases. Okay. So, there's one of our concerns. But probably the one that most, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
Well, no, I was just gonna tell listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, which stretches from North Dakota to Patoka, Illinois. We're discussing a current court battle over a proposal to double the flow rate of the pipeline. We've been speaking with John Albers, who's representing environmental groups in the case, and Lesha Bushak, one of my colleagues at Illinois Public Media, where she's an environment and climate reporter. You can always join our conversation at 800-222-9455 if you have questions or comments about the Dakota Access Pipeline in Illinois. What do you think about doubling the flow rate under Illinois into Patoka? 800-222-9455. Lesha, I want to bring in sort of another voice through some of your tape here. You spoke with a farmer in South Central Illinois for your story on this. Can you tell us a bit about him, his farm, and Patoka, and what some of his concerns are?
Sure. So I spoke with a farmer named Dave Schlickebeer. He's located in Montgomery County, so it's a little bit northwest of Patoka. So the pipeline runs directly through his farmland. And, you know, I visited his farm, actually. He mostly has corn and soy on his 3,200-acre farm. And the farm has been in his family for five generations. So he was telling me about how his great-grandparents farmed the land, how his son is now farming the land, and how he hopes his grandchildren will as well. So it's, you know, this land has been in his family for a long time. And he told me that when the pipeline was being built under his land in 2016, he had a lot of concerns. And he told me that he had a fear of there being some kind of leak or rupture that could leak into his soil, damage the soil, and also groundwater where he has a well on his land.
Let's take a listen to a clip of what Dave had to say.
Heaven forbid that would happen. It's always in the back of your mind. But I mean, a 30-inch pipe gets a leak, it's not going to take very long. You know, even if you get it shut off, I mean, I would assume your dirt would be contaminated. And if you get a leak, it's going to get into your groundwater.
So Lesha, did Dave support the protests, you know, places like Standing Rock against the pipeline back in 2016?
He did. And that was something he actually expressed to me, that, you know, the company had already set up the decision that it would be cutting through his land. But he was hearing about the protests in North Dakota. He was actually supporting them, and he was hoping that they would stop the pipeline from being built. And he was a bit disappointed when that unfortunately didn't happen for him. You know, that was interesting to hear. And it was actually also something that the researcher I had mentioned, Mackenzie Johnson with the University of Illinois, something that she found in her research, that many of the landowners in Illinois that she surveyed expressed similar concerns to the protesters in North Dakota. And there was this connection between people in South Central Illinois, landowners in the route, and, you know, the people in North Dakota, thousands of miles away. So that was one of the main takeaways from her research, that there was kind of this common concern between people along the route of the pipeline.
Lesha, I do want to ask about Energy Transfer, the company, right? You spoke to them, or at least corresponded with them for your story. What is their perspective on this? What do they have to say about, you know, why they think this is a good thing to expand this capacity?
I spoke with an Energy Transfer spokesperson, and she told me that the company's plan to expand the pipeline capacity does not change any of the risks associated with the pipeline. So she said that, you know, increasing the capacity is well within the design of the current pipeline, that there would be no evidence of increased risks of leaks or anything, that it was built with the highest, safest standards in place. You know, I also asked her, you know, the idea that Illinois is investing in allowing this pipeline to go through the state is sort of, you know, the idea that it's pulling away from moving forward to a renewable energy future. And she said, essentially that, you know, there will be a mix of energy resources moving forward, but that Energy Transfer believes oil and natural gas will continue to play an important role for decades. So that was kind of Energy Transfer's response to that. She also said that, and this is a common argument among oil companies and pipeline supporters, is that it's actually safer to transport oil through pipelines than it is through truck or rail. And that's, you know, common argument that we hear from oil companies.
Well, John, how about that? As somebody who's representing environmental interests from a legal standpoint, aren't oil pipelines less likely to leak than trains are to derail? Is this not a safer way to transport this material, as the pipeline company said?
Well, according to our research, the Congressional Research Service is reported that railroads actually spill less crude oil per ton mile transported than pipelines. Now, if you look at the numbers, there may be more common or more frequent, rail spills, rail-related spills. But in terms of volume of oil spilled, pipelines definitely spill more oil.
And we're coming to the end of our conversation, maybe just a minute left. But John, I just want to ask, what is the next step in the legal process here with the Commerce Commission? Where do things go, and what are you hoping to have happen?
Well, we're waiting for the administrative law judge there to issue his recommended decision to the commissioners. We have not seen that yet. It may be because there's some federal court action going on. If the federal circuit court and district court, there's both things going on at both levels, it's still possible there that the pipeline may be shut down. If the pipeline shut down through federal action, it would definitely be our position that there's no point in trying to double zero here in Illinois. So maybe the ALJ may be waiting to hear what happens at the federal level.
Okay. Well, we will continue to keep an eye on this case as it progresses. John Albers is an attorney representing environmental groups opposed to expanding the capacity of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which flows to Patoka, Illinois. John, thanks for sharing your views with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
And we've also been speaking with Lesha Bushak, who's a climate and environment reporter at Illinois Public Media. Lesha, great to talk to you. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, more to come in just a moment. We're going to be taking a look at the HBO horror drama series Lovecraft Country. It has black protagonists in mid-20th century America confronting monsters, both the sort of fantastical kind and the very real racist kind in Jim Crow America. Parts of the show were filmed in Illinois. We'll talk about that coming up after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us.